Welcome to the Montréal Derm Files podcast. This podcast is intended to provide clinical guidance on how medical dermatologists approach the diagnosis and management of skin conditions. The goal is to help dermatology residents and other trainees, as well as other health professionals, acquire competency in the field of dermatology and help prepare for OSCE-style examination.
Okay, excellent. So good evening, everyone. And it's our pleasure to do this first ever edition of a podcast. So it's 10 p.m. in Montreal. We're all a little bit sleepy, but nonetheless quite excited to do this trial. Hopefully it's going to be a trial and, you know, continuous thing and not trial and error. So what the purpose is really to provide you a guidance about how to approach diagnosis. So for tonight's session, we are focusing on drug hypersensitivity reactions. So I'll introduce myself, Dr. Elena Nechiporuk, of course, informally Elena, and I graduated from McGill Dermatology Residency Program in 2017 and has been practicing staff at McGill since that time, and my practice is primarily academic. I also do research in immune-mediated skin diseases. And once in a while, I have a practice outside of the hospital setting in community dermatology. I'm here tonight with Lydia, who is a PGY2 dermatology resident at McGill, and she will be the one hosting and asking questions about drug hypersensitivity reactions, really tailored about what she, as a trainee, want to learn from tonight's session. So I will let Lydia take the lead now.
Hi, everyone. My name is Lydia. As Dr. Nechiporuk said, I am an R2 at McGill University. And it's a pleasure. Thank you so much, Dr. Nechiporuk, for your time today and for discussing with us this very important topic that may be also scary for junior residents like me. So I will start with introducing a case that I've seen actually last weekend when I was on call. And I was called in the middle of the day for a 48-year-old female patient who had a recent diagnosis of lymphoma and has been through multiple different medications recently, including some antibiotics as well. And I was called for a maculopapular rash that started on her trunk. And the consult said, rule out drug-induced rash. So I went into the hospital and I started thinking about my approach. And that will lead to the first question, Dr. Nechiporuk, for you. What is your approach when you're consulted for a drug hypersensitivity reaction?
Yes, excellent question. So I think all of us, we love when non-dermatology physician gives us a consult for maculopapular rash, because I think over the years, especially, you know, me with a few years into practice, I have seen many different varieties of maculopapular rash, including seborrheic keratosis and multiple cherry angiomas. But of course, sometime we actually are consulted for the maculopapular rash. So the first thing I think from a dermatologist's perspective is really to actually see the morphology, because I think most of the time it's not necessarily a morbilliform rash and it can be miliary or something else. So for me, it's actually much more helpful to physically go in and see the patient and look at the morphology. So first, typically with your maculopapular exanthem or with your morbilliform eruption, you will see this kind of this erythematous macules and papules, and the distribution will usually go from the trunk and will spread centrifugally toward the limbs. So this is your first thing. So when you have a rash that is just on the back, that's usually not a drug rash. So you'll have something that is relatively generalized through the skin. So in this case, you see, and it could be compatible with a type 4 hypersensitivity reaction. So then your next question is that, I mean, could it be something else? So then, of course, you have to do your proper like history with the past medical history of the patient, which medication patient took at home, and currently any previous allergic reaction to any medication. Comorbid diagnosis, like you've mentioned, Lydia, lymphomas. So patients who have a pre-existing malignant or inflammatory condition, they can have this kind of costimulatory signal, and they are likely to be more prone to developing drug hypersensitivities. So you take that all in mind, and that helps you to see if there is maybe an alternative diagnosis. So sometimes, you know, a generalized rash, it can even be lupus. So by gathering this history and this physical exam helps you to see if there is a better fit diagnosis than a drug eruption. And then you need to do your drug chart to see which drug is the most likely culprit. And of course, that typically will take into account typically the drugs that have been new for the last two weeks prior to the onset of the eruption. But in certain conditions, such as DRESS syndrome or drug reaction with eosinophilia and systemic symptoms can go up to 12 weeks before, but typically between 2 and 6 weeks. So then you're looking, okay, the morphology could be compatible. And now you have to see if there is a drug culprit potentially. You're doing your drug timeline. So you're seeing if within the last, for your typical maculopapular exanthem, typically within a week or two, or with DRESS syndrome, typically within 2 to 6 weeks, but can go up to 12 weeks prior to developing the eruption. So then you will see if there is something that fit the timeline. But then also some drugs are much more allergenic than others. So you have your high-risk drug categories. And these categories typically will include your anticonvulsant, especially your aromatic anticonvulsant. It will also include your antibiotics. Example, your beta-lactam and sulfonamides are high risk. Allopurinol is another one. Your antiretrovirals and other antimicrobial agents. But of course, it's not just limited to this and other medication can also be potential culprits. But certainly you have the timing and then you have the high risk drugs. So those two things will help you to decide which drug is the most likely. Then the most important thing is which type of reaction are you dealing with? So in most patients, okay, you're saying it is compatible with this morbilliform type 4 hypersensitivity reaction. In most cases, it's a benign reaction. Then in some patients, it can even resolve when you treat through the patient. But then you need to rule out other important things, such as DRESS syndrome, Stevens-Johnson, toxic epidermal necrolysis, AGA by example. So this is the typical mindset when I'm going and seeing a consult about the drug reaction.
Excellent. And speaking of a different type of drug reaction, we often refer to Stevens-Johnson syndrome or toxic epidermolytic necrolysis as something that we want to make sure that we rule out. Is there any signs or red flag that you consider that make you think of Stevens-Johnson, especially when it's very early and you don't have the classical blistering rash at that phase?
Yeah, so one of the first things that I typically see when I enter the room is the general level of the patient. And I think this is something that the books don't necessarily comment on. But if you're entering and the patient is smiling and eating their supper and like chit-chatting with you, it's unlikely to be Stevens-Johnson TEN. So typically when you're coming and the patient has Stevens-Johnson TEN or DRESS syndrome, they're not well. Even if they have no blisters yet and they're not screaming in pain, they have a malaise. They just seem unwell. And you have this first gut feeling as soon as you enter the room. So if your patient is unconscious because they just got extubated for a surgery, then you cannot tell this. But in a patient that is conscious, usually you'll have this gut feeling when you enter the room. So then you're looking at the distribution. So Stevens-Johnson and TEN will typically affect the mucosa. So this is always when you're writing a consult, you have to rule out your pertinent negatives. So one of your pertinent negatives for Stevens-Johnson and TEN will be there is no mucosal involvement. And then you look at the three primary mucosa that we examine. You'll look at the mouth. And not just looking at the lips, ideally you examine inside the mouth too to make sure there is no erosions inside the mouth. And then you look if there is conjunctival erythema, or in some cases it's worse than erythema. And then ideally, if the patient allows you, you also can double check the external genitalia. To be honest with you, for a mild reaction that do not scream Stevens-Johnson TEN at you, I don't necessarily offer to examine the genitalia because I don't feel the need. But if you're really concerned, then you really have to have your pertinent negatives that the mucosa is not involved. So then you're looking at other things. So you're looking at morphology. Commonly, like you've mentioned, for Steven Johnson to Young, you can have this targetoid lesions. But your targetoid lesion in Steven Johnson to Young are distinct from erythema multiforme because they're flat. And they usually can have two colors. So the central dusky color basically represents impeding necrosis of the skin. So it will be flat, it will be macular, not the juicy papular one in erythema multiforme, which can have two or three rings. This one can have two rings, but the center kind of this violaceous gray dusky. Once you have seen a bunch of them, you'll see, okay, it feels like the skin is getting necrotic right there. So just about to be detached. So that's one thing. And then typically, as opposed to erythema multiforme, it will go centrifugally from the trunk down to the extremities. And you also have to write in the chart, typically we expect you to, if there is Nikolsky, which can be direct or indirect Nikolsky. So direct Nikolsky, you actually apply tangential pressure on the rash, like this dusky like plaques that you see. And if that causes skin detachment, that's your Nikolsky. And you can also have indirect Nikolsky in patients where they have a blister or bulla. And then you see that as the bulla expands with the gravity, it will separate the skin further. So those things are certainly screaming a dangerous rash at you. So having this pertinent negatives is very helpful.
Great. That's very helpful. Now that you have created and elaborated a differential diagnosis and you think you're going towards the direction of a drug hypersensitivity rash reaction, what are the elements that you base yourself on or you consider when you want to determine if you're going to perform a biopsy? In other words, how do you know in which specific situation or what exactly will lead you to decide to do a biopsy versus not do a biopsy and decide to do other investigations?
Yeah, very good. So typically, you kind of know what you expect to see in a drug rash. And the biopsy that you will perform will not even help you to distinguish a morbilliform eruption from a viral illness. It will look exactly the same. And it will not help you to distinguish from Dress syndrome. But it will certainly help you to distinguish from Steven Johnson, TEN, and AJEP. So in the context where you have hypersensitivity reaction, you're pretty sure that it's likely to be hypersensitivity reaction. You don't really need to do a biopsy. You can just stop the culprit medication, treat topically or systemically if it's necessary, and potentially offer a follow-up for the patient to make sure the patient is doing well. But if you have this doubt that maybe the patient is evolving towards Steven Johnson TEN, a biopsy is absolutely warranted. When you're not certain about your diagnosis, you think maybe it could be AJEP, by example, or another type of reaction, maybe it's acute lupus, by example, or something else, then a biopsy will be actually helpful. So this is the context where we typically do this. Sometime we kind of, I guess, succumb under pressure and we will perform a biopsy because our consultant really wants us to, but we usually resist that. So really kind of guided whether it's going to help the patient or not. What I wanted to mention as well is that when we looked at the clinical exam, I didn't mention for DRESS what we're looking at. So we mentioned about the pertinent negatives for Steven Johnson TEN, but there's certainly some things on the skin that can give you a hint about DRESS syndrome. And the first hint will be facial edema. So initially, when I was a resident, I'm like, what does it mean, facial edema in DRESS? It must be just like, you know, fluid retention, like anasarca-like. And then after seeing cases and cases, I'm sure maybe some colleagues might disagree with me, but I think at least this is my observation. It feels like the skin is unfiltrated. That's kind of how it looks like. It looks like it's a giant, like coalescent papules on the face. So it doesn't look like your edema, like patient has fluid retention. It actually looks like the skin is infiltrated. So that's one of your first things. Then the patient typically looks unwell. They're not chit-chatting with you. They're not comfortable. They have a malaise, and then they can have lymphadenopathy, and then their morphology can be a bit more tricky. So in addition to have this macular papular, they can have other features like purpuric lesions and potentially petechia. And sometimes you can even have blisters, making things more complicated. So I think we answered that question.
Yes, yes, exactly. And actually, speaking of dress, do you ever ask for any investigations such as a laboratory test? We know that in dress you can have systemic involvement or some organ involvement, and you can have also high eosinophils, for example. In terms of your dermatology perspective from a specialist, do you order some investigation to confirm or infirm or guide your differential diagnosis when you're thinking of dress?
Yeah, of course. So dress by definition has systemic involvement and commonly eosinophilia. So I think for most of the drug rashes that you see in clinic, you can never be 100% sure that it's not dress. So I think it's a good practice when you see a patient that has a quite extensive drug eruption to do just blood tests today to make sure the organs are not involved. And when it's all negative, it certainly reassures you that even if it's a drug allergy, it's not a very dangerous one. So what do I typically do? So if I have a very low degree of suspicion for DRESS, I'll have a very narrow workup, which will just include complete blood count, liver function test, and kidney function test. However, if the patient is admitted to the hospital, the patient is visibly unwell, has MLS, and my degree of suspicion for DRESS is higher. And what do I mean by higher degree of suspicion? Well, there's some scoring systems that you will learn during your residency. It's called, one of them is called the Regiscar criteria. And that already increases your index of suspicion for DRESS. So by example, if your drug culprit was between like 2 and 6 weeks, typically, that gives you certain points that it's more likely to be DRESS. If there's palpable lymphadenopathy, if the patient has fever or MLS, that also gives you points. If there's facial edema, gives you points as well. So then you kind of have this higher degree of suspicion. So certainly you want to really make sure that the drug eruption is not affecting internal organs. So in this case, I typically obtain complete blood count to look if there's eosinophilia, and you can see atypical lymphocytes there too. And you can see leukocytosis as well. I look for kidney function, and not only the serum creatinine, which is extremely helpful, but in some cases, it may not be as obvious as that. So I actually look for proteins and sediment in the urine. And you can see eosinophils in the urine too, which can give you a hint. You're not supposed to see eosinophils in the urine in normal context. Then you check for your liver function test, and you look for both cholestatic and the cytotoxic markers, your ALT, AST, your bilirubin, ALK, FOSC, et cetera, because you can see different patterns of liver involvement. Then many of my colleagues will order serologies for reactivation of viral illnesses. So your herpes viridae family, such as HHV6, 7, CMV, and EBV. I don't think we have a full answers whether we should do it or not. So part of it is guided by scientific curiosity to do those tests. And part of it is that there's some preliminary data that suggests that it could be related to prognosis. And maybe when there is this reactivation of latent viruses, it can make a more dangerous course for the patient. So I typically order those. And otherwise, some individuals will order an electrocardiogram and troponins. I typically don't do it as a routine. However, if there is a high degree of suspicion of DRESS, or if there's any hint that the patient may have cardiopulmonary DRESS, this additional investigation should be ordered as well.
Great. Thank you for this very complete answer. Now that we've seen the patient, perform the physical exam, and order some labs, and we are leaning towards the direction of a drug hypersensitivity reaction, under which circumstances would you absolutely decide at that point to stop the culprit medication that is suspected? And is there any absolute contraindication, for example, if the patient has absolutely needs a certain medication, whether it's an antibiotic or another type of medication? Where do we stand in terms of saying that we can continue some drug in some kind of reaction and we cannot absolutely continue them in other types as part of our differential diagnosis?
Yes, very good. So first thing, if it's a dangerous, potentially life-threatening or organ-threatening rash that is caused by medication, the medication must be stopped and never challenged with that drug ever again, because it just potentially life-threatening, like Steven Johnson, TEN, DRESS should never be rechallenged. The drugs absolutely must be stopped. They cannot be treated through. Typically for AGEP, because the reaction can be actually quite erythrodermic and severe, again, typically no rechallenge, and the drug must be stopped. In general, if you can't stop, you stop. But as you mentioned, in some contexts, you just can't. So if it's just your type 4, you know, garden variety, maculopapular exanthem caused by antibiotic X, and this antibiotic absolutely must be given, I am comfortable treating through with a close supervision to make sure that the rash does not progress to something. It typically is not supposed to progress. However, we're always, you know, cautious that we didn't misdiagnose an early DRESS. So we want to make sure we follow the patient, we reassess, and if the patient tolerates it well, then it's okay. I have had cases like that over time. And typically what I would observe is that by treating through with topical, pretty much full body corticosteroids with appropriate potency based on the area of the skin treated, you will see that eventually the immune system will say, okay, I'm done. And then in a week or two, the rash will actually start to subside, almost like if you, you know, have stopped the drug in the same way. So I think, you know, this immune system is quite curious, because otherwise we would just label everybody allergic. You know, like the paradigm, you know, for pediatric patients, by example, when I was a kid, I was given amoxicillin for mono or for viral illness, like everybody does. And I have developed a maculopapular exanthem. And I only had the guts to challenge myself for it when I became a dermatology resident doing an allergy immunology rotation. So I was, you know, in the hallway with Dr. Ben Shoshan, who you know at McGill, and I was like, you know what? I just popped a pill of amoxicillin. Let's see how it goes. And it went really well. And certainly there is quite a bit of data there that you can challenge these patients and it can work well, because immunology is a fascinating process that maybe in some of the cases, it actually takes two for tango. Maybe it's not only the drug, but it takes the costimulatory signal from the infection itself or the acute illness. So if a patient has a benign, in brackets, a drug eruption that has no organ involvement, absolutely nothing to suggest Steven Johnson, TEN, or AGEP, or DRESS, and the patient absolutely needs this medication to continue right now, you could carefully treat through and follow up with skin exams and potentially serial blood tests, just to make sure.
Excellent. And thank you for your example. That's definitely something we will keep in mind when reviewing this chapter. So aside from stopping the culprit medication that we've been able to identify, when do you decide to start a systemic corticosteroid, for example, on top or instead of topical treatment with topical steroid, as you mentioned, in addition to stopping the culprit medication?
Okay, great. So that depends on the drug rash you're dealing with. So let's start first with the typical garden variety maculopapular exanthem. So your benign hypersensitivity reaction. You stop the culprit drug and you treat topically. But it's so extensive, the patient cannot sleep, the quality of life is just unbearable. Then you may decide, okay, I'm going to give systemic corticosteroids so the patient is able to resume their life faster because it's just so uncomfortable. So this is the context for your benign or non-severe drug eruption. Then we can speak now about DRESS syndrome. So DRESS, again, it has different varieties, degrees of severity. So let's take, there is a patient with DRESS. You made the diagnosis of DRESS because there is a plausible culprit drug that was started 2 to 6 weeks before. The patient has some facial swelling, some eosinophilias in the blood, and some palpable lymphadenopathy, and let's say that there is a reactivation of HHV6. So you're certainly meeting your high probability of diagnostic criteria for DRESS, but the LFTs are almost not elevated. Let's give an example, like ALT, instead of being like 40, it's 70. So it's not even twofold elevated. And the kidneys are fine. So then you're like, okay, maybe I don't have to treat with systemic corticosteroids because we would consider that being a mild DRESS. So in this case, you absolutely have to stop the drug. You treat topically and then you reassess regularly, because DRESS can be a challenge. It can progress. You can have delayed presentation of organ involvement, such as heart involvement or thyroid gland involvement, by example. And it can also recur if you stop the treatment too soon. And it can recur for even months after. So, but if you have a DRESS which has organ involvement, there is more than 3 times elevation of LFTs, by example, and it has evident kidney involvement, like acute kidney injury, this is typically the indication for systemic therapy. And right now, we still use prednisone as our first line, which kind of makes sense because prednisone, like I remember when I was a derm resident, I was quizzed, what is the drug that is the most efficient to decrease the chemotaxis of eosinophils? And the answer was prednisone. So it certainly does the job, and there are better drugs than that now, but this is readily available and it works fast in a non-specific manner, just decreases the inflammation in general. So prednisone is typically given for a moderate to severe DRESS, and it's typically given for a few months, typically tapered not sooner than 6 weeks. So it takes 6 to 12 weeks at minimum before the prednisone is tapered off. And sometimes longer, depending on reaction, the patient must be reassessed regularly, mm-hmm. at least once a month.
At least once a month. Excellent. And speaking of reassessment of the patient, so let's say we see a patient and we suspect a diagnosis of a severe drug hypersensitivity reaction. We're thinking DRESS, AGEP, or Steven Johnson. And we see that patient at a follow-up. So all the patient was on multiple medication, let's say 5 or 6, we stopped all of them because we couldn't identify which drug was causing that at the moment. And we see the patient as a follow-up, let's say a few weeks after the rash have completely resolved, the patient is doing well. What is your approach in terms of identifying the drug that may have caused this rash, knowing that the patient really wants to know and has top 5 or 6 medication that were suspected?
Yeah, very, very good point. Because in this case, with a severe drug rash, we cannot rechallenge. So with a severe drug rash, when we cannot rechallenge, if we are pretty sure about which drug, because there is one or two, it just stopped and that's it. But when it's multiple, it's certainly a challenge because a patient may need those drugs at some point of their life. So at McGill, we're lucky. We have a nice allergy immunology service where they offer drug patch testing, and they also offer the in vitro lymphocyte stimulation test. So if a center has these tools, this is certainly something that can be done, and it's not perfect, but it certainly helps to identify the plausible culprit. But if you don't have it, then you're quite limited, and you just have to, any drug that you think could have caused that cannot be resumed for a severe drug reaction. And typically, it's very, very important to remember that if you had one of the SCARs, severe drug reaction, the acronym is SCARs, you can never rechallenge. It's too dangerous.
Thank you very much, Dr. Nitschebrook. So that was the last question of our podcast today. Thank you very much for your time. We hope that this was the session was helpful for the resident that will listen to this podcast. We hope that you enjoy and that you reconvene for the next podcast.
Thank you, Lydia. Have a good night, everyone, or good day, depending on where you are.
Thank you for joining the conversation on the Morial Dermfiles podcast, and until next time.